Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast.
Vicky Salcido Cobb is an herbalist living at an off-grid homestead in Northern California. In this episode, we talk about how she transformed her life from being hospitalized for stomach pains to being a healthy, happy, wild woman living in beautiful relationship with the earth. Vicky shares how she works with and hears the voices of plant spirits. She talks about living beyond sustainability with regenerative business and lifestyle practices. And we discuss how to move past feeling overwhelmed when it feels like our actions just aren't enough in facing the huge issues that are popping up around the planet.
We're your hosts, sisters Natalie
and Lizzie Ross.
Dream Freedom Beauty is a podcast for free spirits who yearn to connect deeply with their intuition and manifest their dream lives in harmony with the earth.
You can find the podcast show notes at dreamfreedombeauty.com.
Welcome, Vicky Salcido Cobb, to the show. We're so excited to have you here.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, ladies.
Yeah, it was so fun to research you and to get to learn about your extraordinary life and journey to this magical spot that you live in now. So for our listeners, brief background, Vicky is an herbalist and she lives on a primitive homestead in Northern California. Vicky, will you tell us a little bit about your primitive homestead and what you do there?
Yeah, so I think mostly we're off-grid, and I think it's really important to highlight that there's many different ways to be off-grid. There is some very primitive ways to live where you're literally living in a structure. And like my good friend Rachel, like, chops wood and, you know, carries water and has no electricity. And that's her life. Ours is actually pretty fluffy. I would never call it primitive. We do live off the grid, meaning we're not on the city grid at all, but we have a really beautiful home. It's insulated with local sheep's wool, so it's nice and cozy. But we also have solar panels, so we have electricity, and we get our energy from the sun, which is fantastic. We are really, really blessed to have a spring nearby us. So we have delicious spring water from the land. And then we run our refrigerator, our stove, and our oven off propane. But we live on a 160-acre property that is stewarded and owned by this wonderful woman named Donna. And it's mostly hills. It's very hilly. It's a pretty steep road, pretty intense road. But yeah, so there's, we can go into a lot more detail, and I'm sure we will later, but that's like the basics of like my actual home and like the super logistic side of it. We grow a lot of our own food and a lot of our herbs, but we're also really blessed to have a fantastic community here in Willits where we can get a lot of our cheese, our meat, our dairy, our bread, everything locally. So we're really blessed here.
Awesome. And I love how you're like, I would never call it primitive, because it's so funny how different the perspective is of like, I'm sitting here in my suburban home and I'm like, that's primitive, girl. But you're like, no, this is fluffy.
It's funny because when we first moved there, yeah, it's like fluffy now. Well, because we go to like our friends, like my friend Ayana's property, and she's like major off-grid, and she's like, your home is warm. I'm like, I know, girl. But we live on this, in this beautiful home, and it's nice and cozy. But when we first moved there, we were like scared to charge our phone. You know what I mean? Like we were like, oh, do we have enough electricity? Because we're like learning solar. And I guess I've been there for 2 years, so it seems like it's a lot fluffier now. But definitely when we first moved in, it was a learning curve for sure.
Wow.
Is it just the two of you, or are there other folks who live on that land besides you and Donna?
Yeah, there's other folks who live on the land. We have, my husband and I live in what's called the Acorn Cabin, and that's our sweet little home. And then there's two other great landmates named Christina and Zach who live in tiny homes on the property. So in total, there is five of us, and we all have our own private spaces, which is nice. Although we do consider ourselves a community in that we support one another. We don't like take meals together unless it's like we just want to. We have privacy, which is really important for the way we like to live. Yeah, so it's a group of us really keeping the land afloat.
Cool. And then, so where did you come from? Before this, where were you and how did you find this space? How did you manifest it?
Well, I mean, it depends on how far back you want to go, and I'll do my best to Cliff's Notes this. But I'm originally from a North County suburb of San Diego named Vista, and it's a beautiful place that used to be a lot of rural farmland. It still has some rural farmland, but you know, every time I go home, there's more and more suburbs and housing complexes and roads, and less land for the coyotes. But I grew up there and with a loving family, and was really blessed. Both my parents came from Mexico, and yeah, I mean, I guess I had a basic suburban life. We went to, you know, public school and had our immunizations and ate, I don't know, Fruity Pebbles and stuff.
Fruity Pebbles were my jam
Fruity
as a
Pebbles,
kid.
Man. They were the holy grail of breakfast.
So
foods.
Many things. The pops, you just couldn't stop it. But and then somewhere along, I guess when when I was like 19 or 18 years old, I moved down to like San Diego proper, which is the south side of the county. And at the time, I actually was working as a co-manager for Bath and Body Works. And I did that for a really long time. And I really credit that place for teaching me a lot of like my abilities today. But I lived there. I lived in this house. We had a lot of fun. We partied a lot and had a lot of great times. But then I started waking up with some pretty insane stomach pains, like so much so that I'd like go to the hospital and be hooked up to a morphine drip. And it was not great. And it happened multiple times in a month, to the point where I finally had this experience while I was laying there in the hospital bed, totally like dazed on morphine and just in this terrible place where I was thinking like, there's gotta be a better way. So that was like the first little seed of like, this is not the best. So we'll fast forward and skip this whole big chunk of my life, because that would take like the full hour of the podcast. But I lived in San Francisco and had a great time in San Francisco. But same kind of thing. I moved to San Francisco, escaping some heartbreak and other stuff, and partied a lot and had a lot of fun. And same kind of thing. I started, at this point, though, the sickness wasn't in my stomach. It was in my head and my heart. And I was really feeling lost. I mean, like severely lost. And just through chance and like this deep desire to have to go somewhere else, I went to visit a friend of a friend in Portland, and I got a really bad cold when I was in Portland, and I went to a clinic, and the doctor gave me a tincture, an herbal tincture. And that I think was like a big major turning point for me, because this little brown bottle with like all these weird names on it healed me in like, you know, a week. This very bad, it wasn't even a cold, it was a pretty bad flu, and it was full of antiviral herbs. And I was like, what is this thing? I was used to like pressed white pills and blister packs, you know? Mm-hmm. And she told me, she was like, oh, well, these are herbs. They're, you know, parsley and cilantro, those are herbs. Well, these are other herbs, and they're antiviral, and they'll help you get better. And I was so, oh my God, I was so in awe of that. And the fact that like little plants could make me better, and they were so small, and it didn't make me feel sick or tired or anything. I didn't have like warning labels all over it, you know? So I ended up moving back home, much to my chagrin, and kind of like just rolled with it. And all these things happened where I ended up enrolling in farm school, learning about the basics of farming, because I knew that my stomach issues were based on processed foods. And I learned about farming, I started learning about herbs, and I just never looked back.
Wow. Like, how old were you at that point?
Let's see, I moved back in 2009. So I was, I don't know, something.
Mid-20s.
Yeah. Something cool. Like that.
Quote on your website, I don't pretend to be an expert on living, but I do know that most of us are living some version of life that someone else taught us. And I love this story, because I feel like it illustrates your journey of discovering like these default behaviors that were hurting you, and becoming conscious of your power to choose something different, and then putting it into action, which I just want to applaud you for. Clap. That takes guts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I think that that's been such a driving force for me. Like, truly, like, a lot of what's happened and changed within me has been sort of out of necessity. I mean, I was like, when I say I was, my heart and my head were sick, I was like sitting in alleys by myself drinking tall cans of booze. You know, like, I was in a dark place. I was very sad. I would be in a room full of people who adore me and say, nobody understands me, nobody loves me. And I was in such a dark place, you know, and it was definitely out of necessity that I knew at the time it felt like escapism, but really I needed to break free. It was like this, I had to move. And actually, there's this pretty amazing memory I have when I was driving to Portland after this like really sad time of my life, and I turned a corner and I saw rolling hills of trees, and I'd never seen anything like that before. And I remember pulling over and literally falling to my knees and bawling my eyes out and just sobbing to these trees and feeling heard for the first time in years. Not that wow. the people that don't love me weren't listening, but I felt heard on a different level, and it was like, okay, I can do this. I can do something else. Yeah.
Wow. And you say when you went back home after you were in San Francisco, you moved back home much to your chagrin, and you kind of just rolled with it. And you rolled all the way to your destination now.
Yeah.
Was there any particular bit of wisdom or anything that you kind of kept in the back of your mind as a guiding star while you were rolling with it?
Yeah, I mean, when I say much to my chagrin, it was because at that point I'm like 22 and I'm moving back to my parents' house, or 24, right? And I have amazing parents and they've always been super supportive. So that's been really helpful. Like any of my crazy life choices, they've been like, that's a great, great idea. But soon, which is great.
So same, same.
Soon, yeah, lucky, lucky. So soon after I moved home, I met my now husband, Russ, and he has definitely been like this key voice and wisdom in my ability to just move forward and take deep breaths. Because this man is constantly like, just take one step at a time. You got this. It's all good. And I'm always like, bah! You know, and he'll just chill me out. So I think he, having him in my life and the friends that I made when I moved home was really crucial, because they were so like, it's all good, Vicky. Just take one step at a time. So things just kind of naturally happen versus the last 2 years of my life where I was trying to force things to happen, which is like a familiar story, right?
Yeah.
I kind of just was like, you know what? I have a great life. Let's take a deep breath. Let's enjoy where I am. And then I'd meet this amazing person, or I'd go to this amazing class, or, you know, X, Y, and Z would happen. And then it's just like, I mean, like where we are living today is because I decided to go to Spirit Weavers in Joshua Tree after I lost my job on a farm when we were totally broke. And I met this girl named Hannah who introduced me to where I am now. And all of that happened because I just said yes. And because I had a partner who supported me and also said, if that's what you got to do, go do it. And now we're living in our dream. So it's good stuff.
It starts with that yes to that, doesn't it? Yeah. Love it. So now you're living the herbalist dream life, and you grow your own herbs, and you also buy herbs from farmers who, I guess, you commission them to grow herbs, right?
Some of them, yes, and some of them, no. Mostly, they're just growing it. Like, seriously, my life is mostly just texting the people that I love and being like, hey, you got any herbs?
Nice.
So awesome. A lot of it they're growing already.
Cool.
And it's great for farmers. You never know what's going to be a surplus or what's going to be a failure in terms of crops. So you play such a cool role in this life cycle of the plants and their delivery to the people by saying, okay, well, I can take X pounds of mugwort or, you know, whatever it is.
Hey, I just did that 2 days ago.
Crazy.
Awesome. And then, so in your business, you make products and sell them, like you make tinctures and stuff. And then you also have, I thought this was really interesting, your community supported herbalism program. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So this really started, like I said, my background first before I became like had an herbal company. And I just want to quickly point out that I started Grandmother's Medicine with a really dear friend of mine, Dina. So I just want to be like, whoop, whoop, Dina.
Shout out to really Dina. Cool.
She just really helped me with that vision. But it's really morphed into stuff. I mean, when I started Grandmother's Medicine, we were doing like, I have pictures. I actually saw them recently, like Epsom salt baths with like just a teeny bit of herbs, you know, and like we were just learning and creating things. And now I use, like you said, all locally grown or wild harvested or grown on our property herbs. And that is like another conversation we can have. But the community supported herbalism came from my background as a organic farmer. I worked My one and only farm job that I had was with this fantastic couple named Scott and Laura Murray, and I worked with them and created a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture. And a lot of farms are doing this now, and it's an amazing way for people to support small farmers who are really, really needing your help and support right now. And it's basically a membership program, so you pay either by quarter, some of them do yearly or annually. I mean,
Twice a year.
Twice a year, that's the word. And what you're doing is you're subscribing to a box of fruits and vegetables and herbs, depending on the farm. Sometimes they even do products like salsas and pestos. So I took that idea, and after I started a community-supported herbalism or agriculture program on the farm I was working on, and it was so successful, and I was so moved by how many people wanted to localize but just needed help learning how to do that. So then I, for a very long time, like well over a year, I had a dream of doing a similar thing with herbs as I started growing my business. And I kind of just said, yes, I'm going to just do it now. There's definitely other herbalists that are doing this in other counties, so I totally encourage you to look for them. Some of them actually are only local, so you are like, you know, you order in the county and you get them. Mine is different. I actually ship all over the country. But it's essentially you sign up for a quarter, 3 months, and you get a box full of goodies every month. Mm. And the difference, what I really am striving to do is not just become like another thing that people have to buy, because I have my opinions about capitalism and about money, right? And so I really wanted it to be something different. So I also included a teaching aspect to it, where I send a booklet with the boxes every month that has a little like a brief description about the four main herbs we use that month, as well as there's recipes for every single product that's in that box so that people can make them themselves. And those booklets are going to be available for anybody pretty soon by donation, because I think that education is so important. And the reality is if I didn't live in a money economy and I didn't have to make money to pay off my debt from back when I was 24, I would love to just give all this stuff away to everybody, but I am in a money economy and I currently do have to support myself, right? So that's why I'm doing it. And I'm constantly trying to think of ways that we can create opportunities for people that maybe want to learn but don't have the ability to sign up for the whole CSH.
And so cool. It's so exciting that you can share that information online to anyone who wants to donate.
Yeah, I encourage every herbalist ever to do that, or farmer, or anybody. We all have so much to teach each other and share in our communities. We really need it. The resilience is key.
I love it too. Yeah. And you know, even if someone's listening and they're like, well, I can't just give all my stuff away. It's like, you can set aside a certain number of products or things per month that are, you know, for someone in need. It's like anyone can give away something, even if it's like a smile, like start somewhere.
Yeah, totally. And there's this really cool thing that I've been realizing, that there's a lot of people who want to give that have abundance. So there's some people, like, I'm going to open up the opportunity if somebody has a lot of abundance and wants to buy a subscription service for somebody in need, then they can do that. But there's just, I'm realizing, like, if there are a lot of people with great abundance that just don't know how to help in such a direct way. So, like, being able to provide that space, like, that's another key and wonderful thing.
Oh, that is cool. Yeah, I love that idea. How to share the abundance, share the wealth. And so one thing, it looked like in your pictures when I was looking around, that you also, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it looked like you sent herbs in the packs so people could make their own tinctures too. Is that the same thing, or is that a different thing? I wasn't quite sure about that.
No, I'm glad you said that, because you're totally right. And part of that package is I try every month to include something that will get the receiver to actually make the herbs. Because there's one thing, you know, about getting a booklet with a bunch of recipes and being like, that's cool, maybe I'll do it one day. And there's another thing of like, here's a bag of mullein, you can make tincture out of it, or tea. And I try to give options so that people can actually get those herbs into their life. And that is inspired by a really cool little community and business called learningherbs.com. They have like a little box that you can buy to learn how to make like elderberry syrup and nettle infusion. And that was like my first experience making anything herbal personally. So I was like, that's so cool to really empower somebody to be able to actually make something at home and to share it with their community. I'm constantly being like, share this with your community, because there's no secrets anymore. We can't have that. It's old paradigm stuff.
Totally. And I love how easy you're making it, because for so many people, it's like they might want to do this, but there's just some block a bit against, they don't want to go out and find all the ingredients.
I don't know enough, or I'm not a good enough witch, or whatever.
Right. But like, here you are, you're like, here's everything you need. All you have to do is do it. It's like,
do it.
Now there's no more excuses.
Well, I just want to like say that I am definitely the queen of like making something way bigger than it is. Like I'm like mental block. That is a massive project. And then it actually only takes like 30 seconds.
Right,
I totally
right.
get it. I fully get it. And part of the reason the box is morphed into whatever it is because I'm like, if this were me receiving it, how can I make it as easy as possible so I would actually do it?
Awesome.
Absolutely.
How can we make it? How can you make it as easy as possible for people to share their abundance, for people to start doing these things and sharing them with their community? Those are good questions to ask, and encourage the listeners to ask themselves that and follow the answers that show up.
So when you start working in the garden and you see what's happening in the garden, and one of the main things, I mean, there's so much going on in the garden, but one of the main things that's happening is massive, massive abundance. And it's like, you really get a clear sense of the fact that nature is really specific and abundant in her medicines. And you feel greedy if you don't share it. Like if somebody leaves my home empty handed, I'm like, oh, I should have given them some oil or some this or this or this, because there's so much of it available that you just feel greedy to hold on to it.
Wow. I've never heard anyone put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Nature's awesome. Best teacher
yeah.
in the world.
And totally.
And you know, I want to dig in a little deeper there. Working in the garden, how do you work with the spirits of the plants and the soil and the elements?
Yeah, actually, your timing is perfect. Yesterday was our work day. So we live on the land that we live on in exchange for working hours. And we start our work days with gratitudes. And everyone says what they're feeling grateful for. And it really has like shifted the way that our days run since we started doing that. And my gratitude yesterday was, I am grateful for the voices of the plants and being able to hear them. Oh. Because 2 nights ago or 3 days ago, for the last like 4 days in a row, I've been in the garden till like 9:30, 10 p.m. because summer is ending and we're like, we can do it. But I really felt like I could hear everybody who needed help. Like the tomatoes were like, okay, it's time to tie me up. The mullein was like, I'm done now. You can cut me down. I mean, I could really hear these conversations. And I'm a really practical person. Like I don't spend a lot of time in like sitting down in front of altar ceremony, but I really feel like I walk my life in ceremony, especially when I'm in the garden, that I'm able to just pick up voices. And I joke around with the plants like I joke around with my friends. Like I cuss at them and they cuss at me and it's great. And so we have this relationship, right? And so being able to communicate with spirits of the plants is special. And I think that one thing that gets a little bit dangerous about the whole plant spirit medicine concept is that sometimes we start to think of like the spirit as like a specific separate form of the plant or like this one facet of the plant. And like to be able to just look at something at face value and let it tell you what it needs is really, really amazing. And that's why I started working with like as many herbs and as much food as I can grow, because I was like, oh my gosh, I can like actually communicate with this stuff. And I know what it needs, or if I don't, I can apologize to it and ask it, you know, and just be like, what do you need? But I think just feeling the aliveness of the garden is absolutely, it's revolutionary for me internally to be able to have the driving force and the understanding that nature is so alive, it is so alive, and that it is no less alive than we are. Mm-hmm. And to be able to constantly feel that around you. I mean, like right now we're all in buildings right now. Right. And underneath our buildings, there's like billions and billions of microorganisms and soil structure and mycelium and so much going on that's alive underneath us. There's bacteria and microbes everywhere all the time. So to be able to be really enriched with that aliveness is just, it's dope. It's great.
Right. I love hearing you say it. Even hearing you say it makes me feel sumptuous and
yeah.
Oh, I want to go outside and take off my clothes and roll in the dirt. It's just
and everybody.
Another thing is like in our shifting paradigms, it's more and more people are waking up to the reality that we are part of nature, and you literally cannot take anything out of nature. And it's like that, we are all connected, and that's so powerful. And so your experience working in the garden with these plant spirits has shown you this direct relationship of like, this is how, you know, you're in relationship with the plants out there saying, hey, what's up? Who needs what? And they're like, what's up? I need this. And they're like, yep, yeah, exactly. Like that's, and that's,
tomatoes are like, you should have been here weeks ago, bitch.
You know what? So that's, I love this because this is exactly how I garden. I'm like, what's up, y'all? I'm sorry. I've been busy. They're like, fuck yeah. you. And I'm like, cool, yep. let's do it.
Okay, let's move forward. Let's move forward. Yeah, they're like, okay, all right, all right, all right.
I know. It's like, it's so fun though.
I love it's that, like, both of y'all are taking your experience out of, I need to consult a book to find out what this plant needs, into the direct moment. It's all about being present the way you are gardening.
Yeah.
Right.
To be totally. With that plant right there.
But you know, right, at this, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead then.
Well, at the same time, like all the book reading I've done, I don't let it dictate what I do, but the plants use the knowledge to like bring up or be like, go look at this thing. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Or it's like those plant spirits sometimes use all those constructs that I've got in my head to communicate, even if it's
totally.
Not exactly
I
what the
that.
Book is saying.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah.
There's another gal that lives on the land. Her name's Christina, and I just like adore her. I call her the garden fae because she like sings to the plants, and she's just like the best. But the other day, I don't run the garden, but I oversee the food garden, and so I kind of dole out tasks. And I recently asked Christina. I said, you know, like you've really been a really crucial part of this garden, and I would love to just invite you to take one or two of your working hours in the garden and just tune in and see what needs to be to happen, because I know you have that intuition. And she kind of was like, she was excited about it. And then I said, when you listen to your ancestors, you know exactly what you're doing. And she totally was like, yeah, you're right. And she's on it. And she's that awareness and that understanding, like she comes from a lineage of farmers and plant growers. And so to be able to just tune in and be like one of my favorite things to say in the garden and in my herbalism practice and in life in general is like, what would I do if this was 500 years ago? How can I simplify this? If I didn't have Google and I didn't have a library resource and I didn't have all this stuff, what would I do? I would have to do something by necessity again, because we are creatures of necessity. I mean, we're living mammals, right?
Right.
So it really simplifies things. It's like, well, I would notice that this plant is sick and I would try to figure out how I can make it better or whatever.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I love that question. Okay, questions are so
fun. Me too.
I love questions. And so, what would I do if it was 500 years ago? What about this question? What would I do 500 years from now when we're living in the sustainable community and world? Like, what would I be doing then too? Envisioning that future of that awareness and collective coming together. Just a thought.
Yeah. I like that.
It's tasty.
Bringing it all together. So out there in the garden, you're out frolicking. So, okay, so this is such a hugely different life than what you brought, you know, what you told us about just a few minutes ago, you know, waking up sick, going to the hospital. I thank you for telling us all that, because it shows that it really is possible to change. Like anyone who's listening to who is like sick or ill or stuck can change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that I also share a couple realities like about our life. It's not like all frolicking and glory, you know, like when it pours rain outside, we don't get to like sit in front of the wood stove until we've gone out to the road and made sure that the road isn't totally eroding. Like giant rocks have fallen into our road and we have to like dig out the hillside so we can drive past it, you know? So there's definitely like physical, I mean, it's most physically demanding work I've ever done. And there's also the aspect of probably the hardest thing about where I am is I'm 600 miles and 12 hours from my family. And that is really, really hard. I grew up with three amazing sisters, my amazing parents, and now I have a niece and nephew and a bunch of cousins. My mom's one of 14, so I have a massive family. And being that far from them is really, really tough. But the reality of like why we do what we do, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but I guess why I do what I do is the earth needs this right now. And it's not this like, I didn't make this choice because I thought it would be nice and it would make for really good Instagram photos. I did this choice because there's estimates that in the next 2 decades, we're going to lose all the farmable topsoil on this planet. I made this choice because there is the most pristine and beautiful forest being cut down right now. And we need to be working with soil. It's like, I know that's very doomsday and heavy, and it's kind of like a lot to take in. But the reality is that no iPhone or car is going to keep us alive. It's clean water, clean air, and nutrient-rich food, which comes from nutrient-rich soil. Mm. And those are the things that keep us alive. So we have to be interested in the things. I don't know any species on this planet that destroys what keeps them alive or isn't constantly working every single muscle in their body every day to keep those things rocking. Like, ants work nonstop so that they can function as a colony, right? And human beings work nonstop to destroy that which gives them life. So it's really important that if you are feeling called to support the waters and support the soil and support the plants, that you do it. We need you. Like, we totally need everybody.
Ooh, give
right,
me chills.
Right. And so what are some of the regenerative herbalism principles you live by?
Yeah, so regeneration is really important. There's a lot of talk about sustainability, and a few people have been like, well, forget sustainability, let's go to regeneration, right? So it's not just like this kind of line that we're on being sustainable. We're like regenerating, so we're producing more abundance than we actually need. One of the big things is localizing. I think like most of our problems can be solved by creating local resilient communities, and it's really tempting to spread out because of the amazingness that is the internet and the ability to reach out to one another. But when we really localize every aspect of our living, that's when things get really resilient. So with herbalism, being able to get all my herbs from local farmers, I'm not only keeping like the local economy afloat, but I know these people, and I know that Sarah and Michael run the farmers market here, and they make it possible for our entire community to have farmers markets. So when I buy a bag full of thyme from them, I'm actually supporting this community and the farmers market. So that to me is regenerative in terms of the community and, you know, the bringing the resilience of the community. I also less and less use wild plants, and it's not because I'm anti-wild plants or anything like that, but because really one of the only wild plants I use in great abundance are two, is Yerba Santa and mugwort, because we have an abundance of it on the land. I'm not anti-wild plants. Like I said, they have a really amazing quality and medicine to them. But, oh, human beings have just been extracting and taking so much from the planet that it's kind of time, I feel like, for me personally, it feels really good that we have this garden where we can compost all of the plant matter into really rich, lovely soil so that we can grow more, and we're saving seeds and we're sharing our seeds. And so we're not just buying. And I want to be really clear with what I'm about to say, that I don't think that this isn't an evil by any means. But for me, I have the choice to not buy bags of herbs that come from, I mean, a lot of these are coming from the Middle East or, you know, well deep into Europe and China, a lot of the herbs that come from large companies, and they're being shipped using fossil fuels, unfortunately, you know, in like these giant boats. And so it's just like, how do we localize and use less really intensive resources like fossil fuels, oil, coal, all that stuff, water. It takes a lot of water to package and ship stuff. So I am like constantly thinking about these things. The fact that I have a business is like constantly like, but even like, cause like, so I bottle things in glass jars. Glass is really intensive. It takes a lot to make glass. And then the glass jars are put in a box in a factory and shipped with fossil fuels, you know? And that like is constantly like,
but you,
my mind.
Yeah. But you also have, you have eco-friendly packaging, and that's not just shipping, but that's like the tubs that your products are in, right?
Yeah, so I'm trying more and more to find that. So I found this great company called Eco Enclose, and those are for like the boxes that I use, and that's all like post-consumer waste. But then I found these little salve jars from a company called EcoVision, and they're made out of paperboard, recycled paperboard, and so they're not glass. But the reality is anything that's being produced on a mass scale, anything, is resource heavy. So that's why I want to be moving more towards education and like really supporting people to make products or make herbs, herbal remedies for themselves and their communities, grow herbs, save seeds, all that stuff really creates resilience and no longer puts people in like, well, if I don't have enough money to buy elderberry syrup, my kid's going to get sick. But I can grow and make these things myself. That is power. That's really, really what excites me.
You know, I could drink elderberry syrup all day just because it tastes so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's on my mind because we just harvested some elderberries yesterday.
Oh, cool. Oh, yum. Yeah, that stuff is awesome.
How about a hard question?
I love
only
them.
Because what is the hardest part about doing what you do?
Let me think about that for a second. I think it's what I just was talking about, knowing that, and I know that I'm sort of an extremist at this point, but knowing that I am still, even though I'm making like conscious decisions, quote unquote, I'm still part of the system that is really seeing Mother Earth as a resource. And like, how do we how do we extract more oil? How do we extract more plants? How do we extract more crystals? There's always this concept of like taking. So I think that's what's really hard for me. Yeah, I guess that's the hardest part of it for me.
Yeah. I know I can relate, and I think a lot of people can probably relate to feeling this oppression of fossil fuels and feeling like, you know, obviously we know some of the impact of fossil fuels, and there's even more that we don't know about yet, about how these cycles could unfold. And it can feel like our hands are tied when, for instance, you've taken these actions to change your life so that it's more aligned with your values and you're not using fossil fuels, and yet you still have to use these resource-intensive products. And you're doing better, quote, than most of us in this game. So just, I wonder if you have any advice or insight for me, for other listeners, about how to make that incremental change and to take action and be in the process of transforming, but also like not explode with frustration about the system that we're caught in.
Yeah, I really want to thank you for that question, because it's a massive one. And I honestly think that a lot of your listeners and a lot of people that I'm connected with are asking this kind of question, like, how can I do this? And I do want to point out another reality, that when I first moved up here and started really learning about the dire state of our soil, the dire state of our seeds, that more than 50% of the seeds are actually owned by companies here. That's food, that's medicine, that's your security and your life. The state of fossil fuels, deforestation, it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It's enough to make you just be like, I'm a nihilist, I'm over it, I'm done, whatever, right? But there's another aspect of it where I got into a very angry and sad place. And I think that that's an important place to go, to be able to acknowledge and know that this is infuriating what's happening right now. And taking that in, not internalizing it, not everyone can actually like take that and properly process it. And I understand that. But it was tough for a few months, that it was like, I was hard to be around, because I was constantly like, why'd you get that napkin? Did you know that that napkin was like made from a tree? You know, like I was just constantly, and people were tired of being around me. I mean, and I get that. It was a lot to handle. And so being able to move from a place of focusing on compassion, and I think like a place like Spirit Weavers, the most common thing that I hear from people is, I had no idea. Like people just don't have a clue how massive the state of our existence is right now, how dire it is. So I think what we can do is just be constantly ask yourself, do I need this thing? Because there is a lot of talk of like keeping fossil fuels in the ground and moving to renewable energies. And while I hear that, and we are on renewable energy, we're on solar panels, to make a solar panel, you have to do a lot of mining, and you have to use a lot of water and a lot of fossil fuels, and you have to probably mine an indigenous land and do some pretty intense stuff just to make a solar panel, right? So it's like, how do we get to a point where we are just using less? Like in our home, we have like one thing plugged in at a time, and that's just because of the solar panels that we have and the resources we have, and our life is awesome. Like we don't have internet and phone, and it's because, you know, and so we read and we play board games. So just being able to ask yourself some, like, how can I simplify and kind of like, do I need this thing is the constant question. Do I need this thing? And also, I think coupling that with, do not burden yourself with like the world's guilt, because what ends up happening a lot of times is like, for this happened to me, is like constantly like, do I need this? No. And then I'd get it, and then oh my gosh, it would just be like weeks of like, why did I do that?
Every
I'm destroying the planet.
I totally feel you. This is funny because my computer is actually dying and I need to move to another room because it's running out of battery power that using nickel from the earth. Oh my god.
Yeah, so I think another thing that we can start doing is getting really creative with reuse. And also, you know, that this whole one-time use thing, being really, really mindful of getting rid of as much single-use products as you can, but getting really creative with reuse. Like, we go through a lot before we throw something away. You know, we ask our community around us if they want it. We check in, can I reuse it for something else? we have this really great thing that's a Mendocino County bulletin board, which is we can type in what we need, and it's like this sort of creative reuse thing. So maybe starting something like that, and it's just through Yahoo groups, you know, starting something like that within your community. Just get really, really creative of how you can waste less, support your local economy more, and use less. And I promise you, it'll be a little bit easier as things flow. Like, we don't buy condiments anymore. We make everything. We make mustard. We make mayonnaise. Like, that seems like a really simple thing, but it's one less thing that I'm buying from a market that was made in a factory, shipped God knows how long, using fossil, you know what I mean?
So, like, it's so easy to make. Yeah.
It's so, yeah. And so how do we really, like, I think the key also, apparently I think there's many keys, but one of the keys is empowerment, empowering each other, empowering your community. And when you can treat a fever with herbs that you used, or you can feed your family three meals a day with food that you grew, or you can hand wash with spring water your clothes, things like this, like, is a really next level of empowerment. But we can't just live on our, I mean, we can, sure. But I'm not interested in living in a bubble of just being like patting myself on the back, like, aren't I so great of all these creative ways that made my life great? Like, how do I take this and share it with as many people as possible to get them excited? Also, one tiny, I'm just going to add one little thing. There's a lot of amazing people doing incredible work who need our support. Like, right now, there are large indigenous communities and non-indigenous communities that are rallying to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is a dirty oil pipeline that will run underneath a river. Like, it's not a matter of if, but when there'll be a spill. So you imagine all the tributaries and the creeks that this river is a part of. So, you know, things like this, like, there's constantly people that need your help. And I realize that, like, we're in the middle of an election year and it's easy to get swept up in this whole world. But I promise you that somebody in your community is doing something really awesome and needs your support to do exactly what you want to do, which is to use less, to be less resource extractive, just to get really excited. Like, I guarantee you there's a local farm that wants your help on a Saturday. I promise you. Mm-hmm. I promise you that there's an after-school program that wants you to come and teach herbalism or cooking to the kids. There's something you can do in a very direct way. I promise you, and you can do it. I also promise you.
That's awesome. And, you know, just for our folks, since we have quite a large local listener group here in the Raleigh-Durham area, there's all kinds of stuff here, like the Durham Scrap Exchange, where if you have, like, anything, you have old posters, you have old, just, like, literally anything. There's been old lab supplies from medical labs.
Acoustic paneling, you know, mannequins.
Take it there. They take it and they resell it, and people use it for all kinds of crazy stuff. It's like there's all these different people doing these things to facilitate this reuse. It's just asking the question of where are they?
Yeah, we also have a crop mob.
The crop mob. Where,
you know, like, there are things that take many hands to do on a farm. And so you probably have one in your area where you can get together with a bunch of other folks on a given day and help a farmer out.
Oh, yeah.
I can guarantee you that you will leave with an abundance of produce. Like, farmers are always like, here, take this big giant bag of pickling cucumbers. Thanks for helping me out for a day.
and you'll probably make some rad friends.
Yes, you will make some rad friends. Yeah. So localizing, like, thinking micro to affect macro. It's really overwhelming what's happening in the world right now. And some of us, like me, I don't have the financial resources to fly to the rainforest and try to stop what's happening. But what I can do is maybe eat one less banana, you know, or think, like, we don't eat bananas anymore. And it's not because they're bad or whatever. It's because the banana industry is kind of crazy. And when we realized that, I was like, ugh. Okay.
Oh, well, shit. I'm going to have to change my morning smoothie.
No, oh, shits. But do ask yourself that question. Like, this morning I had a salad for breakfast. Like, 5 years ago, I would have been like, you crazy. You're supposed to have a Hot Pocket for breakfast, right? And, like, but seriously, like, it just happens. And I could not have loved my salad more than anything in the world today, and it was 100% garden grown, 100%. I used tomatillo salsa that I made for the dressing and pesto that I made for the dressing, and it was delicious and amazing. And you know, 5 years ago, we were having banana smoothies, and that was the only thing that was most important. So it's just about, like, starting somewhere. It doesn't matter. There's this amazing man named Ethan Hughes who's running an incredible organization called the Possibility Alliance, and you can hear an incredible interview that Scott Mann from the Permaculture Podcast did, and I'll have you guys link it, because it's, like, if you want to learn and get inspired of how you can simplify your life, it's a great episode.
Cool. But
that'll be on the show notes page.
Cool. He just says, meet yourself where you're at, but challenge yourself every day. So you're not just complicit in where you are. You're able to be like, I'm doing the best I can, and tomorrow I'm going to do more. And then really hold yourself accountable to that action. But if you need a break and you're like, I need a break from action, do it. Like, sometimes I sleep until 3 because I just need a
awesome.
Break.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you. So yeah. That actually brings me to a question I had. Where I saw you had posted on Instagram, you have these great posts. I know your life is not just created for Instagram posts, but they are a accidental result of your life. It's great Instagram posts. You were talking about how you catch yourself in a cycle of, quote, am I doing enough? Kind of monkey minding and doubting. And I wondered if you could share with our listeners, okay, the basics of that, you know, what does it feel like to be in that cycle? What usually causes that? And what are some of your go-to remedies for ameliorating?
Awesome. That's a good question. That's a gritty question, and I like that because it's real. yeah, so this particular cycle came from this really funny reaction that I had to some of my, like, dearest and most incredible and authentic friends doing an amazing action called, I don't know, some of you may have seen it, it's called Call of the Forests, and it's my dear, a few dear friends, and they went to Alaska to bear witness to the Tongass Forest.
Yeah, the deforestation.
One of the oldest, one of the last remaining old growth stands in the United States being cut down, like 6,000 acres, like as we speak, being cut down right now. So my interaction to that was really interesting. Instead of being like, yeah, right on, fuck yeah, you guys rock, how can I support you? There was definitely a little bit of that, but I fully fell into the cycle of like, oh my gosh, like all I'm doing is living on land and growing food and herbs. That is such bullshit, I'm not doing enough. And I was in that cycle for weeks, and it had nothing to do with them. I mean, they are super authentic in what they're doing, but it was just this trigger for whatever reason for me that felt like I wasn't doing enough. And then instead of like, being like, okay, well then I'm going to do enough or more, blah, blah, blah. I literally like, I fell into a cycle, like you were saying, the monkey mind, where I was constantly like, none of this matters. Whoa. You know, like I was like totally Eeyoring, you know, like just,
oh yeah.
I'm like, whoa.
You know, I gotta be honest. I felt the same way. Cause I was like, damn, I would love to go do that. And you know, I'm a total fuck up sitting here, just like in my nice house with my life here, not going out to like fly and be with the force. And it sent me into my own little mini cycle like that. So
that's really interesting. And I think that that's a dialogue that we can have with our friends who are like in direct action. Because it's like, nobody's doing anything wrong. You know what I mean? Like, no, they're not, like I said, these are like some of the most incredible, authentic women I know. And what they're doing is like, yes, thank God somebody's doing that. And there was just this interesting thing that happened to me where I was like, ugh. And I, for me in that moment, what was a really important remedy was saying things out loud. Like instead of just hiding it, like from my community, my husband, my land, we call her our land mother instead of our landlord. Cause we
love her.
Our land mother, I really was vocal about it. I was like, you know, I'm really having a tough time. And most of my life I've internalized, like I said, I have a lot, and I mean a lot of Pisces in my chart. So I will constantly get in these loops and cycles in my mind. And I've internalized a lot of it, but I was really vocal about it with my husband, with my friends. Wasn't so much with them yet, because they were in Alaska, a little bit busy. but, you know, being able to have this dialogue with the community, and the one thing that, and actually finding that I wasn't the only one feeling that. So Natalie, I'm that's pretty interesting that you felt the same way too. And so there is this, like, I think what that comes from isn't from they are quote unquote better than us or we're not doing enough. I don't think it's either of those things. I think it's that we all have such a desire to do something that when we see somebody else doing something, we fall into like jealousy right away, or this like, like a me-centric, it's like a totally me-centric thing, right? And so supporting the community is, again, I keep talking about that, but it's so important. Like rather than being like, well, I'm not doing enough, it really was a shift of like, well, how can I help you? So that came from a conversation I had with Donna, our land mother, who was telling a story about how a lot of her friends went to go do this really kind of big, massive direct action, and she couldn't do it. She was a single mother with two kids, and she couldn't just like up and leave, right? So what she did is she volunteered to tend their gardens or watch their animals or clean their house or check their mail. And Donna. And she said that there was a group of them that did that, and she said, if we hadn't have done those things, a lot of those women couldn't have gone and done that direct action. So there is different ways that everyone can help, and there's different, you know, yeah, sure, like in your mind, you might be like, oh, that direct action is so much sexier than me changing the bowl of water for the dog, right? Yeah. But it really is an absolutely important part of the whole, that we understand where we are. Again, meet yourself where you're at and then challenge yourself. So instead I offered like, okay, well, when you get back, I want to help build you a home. And that was like, cool. Then that feels really good. And I want to share this on my social media site so we can get the word out there. Refocusing. And honestly, like, I think my main medicine for getting out of those funks is cannabis. It's not the best medicine for everybody, but we live in what's called the Emerald Triangle here in Mendocino County. And it's a really abundant and beautiful and revered and loved medicine here by some. And it is definitely that for me. So taking some time with cannabis and being able to like sit in my garden and hear those voices again and know that like I am in direct relation with so much of life and that feels really good. And then getting creative and excited, like, okay, so I have this energy, I have X resources, I have Y time. How can I put those things together to create results and action instead of being so bummed? And like Lizzie, I'm really glad that you saw and related to that post, because that's what I mean when I said like, I wasn't being quiet anymore, like saying things out loud. And there was like 20 people that were like, dude, me too, feeling the same way. Not about this specific thing, but just about in general. Like, it's exhausting when you feel the mass, the weight of what we're doing to this planet is like, what is going on?
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like all of my sadness is really just a lurking awareness of the earth dying.
Yeah. And sometimes, like the other day, I just, same thing, needed to just sob. Like, and it was like a 20, you know, it's like a 10 second, like.
Nothing like an ugly cry.
It was like a 10 second thing in front of the rosemary. And then it was like, Rosemary was like, okay, cool, you did that. Now pull your ass together, get your shit together, and move on. And I was like, okay, you're right, Rosemary. My bad. And then you can move on, you know? So just try not to hide it. Like, find your community, find your network, and really, like, support, know that they're there to support you and that you're there to support them when they need you too. Because reciprocity is definitely an important factor.
Awesome.
We need to support giving and taking.
A theme that comes up over and over again in our conversations with people on this podcast is to speak and let the energy move. Because if you hold these perceptions and feelings inside of you, that's where they're going to stay. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to have the benefit of other people's perspectives. But if you let them out, the energy in motion will keep evolving, and it'll come back to you as learning. It'll come back to you as friendships. It can come back to you as community. And I love how you used this sense of dis-ease to find a back door into the knowing that we're all connected. So you can't go to Alaska, go water your friend's garden because, you know, you're connected.
Wow.
And I think an important part of what you just said, Lizzie, is that a lot of the injustices and the things that we think are totally crazy are happening because we've been quiet and because we haven't been standing in support and in alliance with the people who need it the most. So I think that that's an important part of that too, of saying things out loud.
Even when you feel awkward, you feel ugly, you feel dumb, you feel, you know, all these like nasty words we like to use. Well, offer it an opportunity to evolve. Speak it. Don't be afraid.
Yeah. And on another theme that we've had lately is sacred activism. And that would be, I would see that as a form of sacred activism. Do you have anything to add about sacred activism, Vicky?
Oh, I think just even those two words together, pretty massive and important. But I think it's, we had a really interesting conversation about this yesterday with our other landmate, Zach, who spent many years in the Bay Area in like direct action and, you know, like really on the front lines to the point of like, yeah. So we'll just skip all that. but we had an interesting dialogue about all the different ways you can be an activist at this point, right? And probably one of the most popular ways that most people are involving themselves in activism is by signing petitions online. And that's an important way to get your voice out there. But I really want to encourage people to check into, again, their local communities and things that are happening in their areas. Because like I said, I think a lot of things are going on because we've been silent. And sometimes the greater oppressor all just needs to know that there's a lot of ears that are paying and eyes that are paying attention. So
and hearts.
Yeah. And in terms of sacred activism, I think it's just really important to stay authentic, really stay authentic. So like for me, what happened with this Alaska thing was this funny thing was like, well, why aren't I going to that? And then, you know, Donna asks, oh, did you want to go? And my instant reaction was, yes, of course I want to go. And then like 2 seconds later, I was like, no, but no, I don't want to go. I have a massive food garden that I love, an herb garden, a community. I don't want to go. And so really what I was feeling was guilt because I felt like that's what I should have been doing and I didn't want to go. So that authenticity part I think is so crucial. So it was like, all right, so it's not authentic for me to just like up and leave and go do that. What's authentic for me is to maybe have dialogue with my Instagram community and my local community about the things that I think are really authentic and sacred and important, and that's mostly the earth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you for being that light.
Mm-hmm. We all are.
Exactly.
And I just want to say one tiny little note about Call of the Forest. They are going to have a direct action in the coming months. So if you're interested and have been keeping an eye on them, I just want to say I love you, ladies, and thank you for the work that you're doing and for really being able to open this dialogue that I think our community needed to have and then like letting us move on and be like, okay, how do we support one another now?
Yeah, what they're doing is so interesting and beautiful and powerful. And it's like, I'm so grateful that they're out there doing that and that they're doing it in a way that we can follow along from home and let that inspire us into our own actions. That's part of the power of this and of this cycle that we're talking about right here of the guilt and like letting that guilt be the jumping point into our own actions. And that's
totally,
that's where the power is. That's what's up.
One more practical point. So another thing I really liked about this post about how you're feeling yucky is that you offered your practical go-tos of, I'm going to drink some water. I'm going to move around. Yeah. I've been sitting too much. I'm going to stop looking at a screen for a minute. You know, like these beautiful little practical action points. So podcast listeners, we love you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
No.
Hang up. No. There's this really great song by Jason Mraz called Back to the Earth. And I always sing it. And he says, whenever my head starts to hurt, before I go from bad to feeling worse, I put down my phone, I get down low and put my hands in the dirt. And that's like totally what I do. I'm like, okay, I feel like shit. Let me go touch some earth.
Jason Mraz.
He's
an inspirer.
So tell us, this has been a wonderful conversation and we're definitely going to have you back because it's so fun to talk to you, talk with you. And before we go though, where do you see your business and your life heading? Because you have some things coming up. You aren't quite sure exactly what it's going to look like, but can you give us some hints at what people can expect from you?
Yeah, sneak peeks.
Yeah.
I think like multiple times I've said, I'm really focused on the teaching and empowering aspect. And I want to just say that I am like not even going to try to pretend like I'm an expert. What I love and thrive on is beginning herbalism, like super basic stuff you can do to keep your family well. I'm not talking about like really intense treatments and things like that. There's amazing clinical and other herbalists that are doing that work. But because of that, I think that there is this great, I'm probably going to butcher it, but there's a great German proverb that goes something along the lines of, the garden is the poor man's apothecary. So I really think that, especially with my personal healing, it wasn't just like I took herbs and I was way better and that was awesome and I kept going with my lifestyle. It was like an entire paradigm shift of consuming less, eating cleaner, localizing, herbalism, sacred relationships. So there was so many aspects of it. And so I'm really interested going forward in supporting as many community members and leaders in inviting that space for people to grow community gardens. Like, I'm really interested in doing things that are as boring as, like, let's have a letter writing campaign so we can all learn how to write letters to our senators, right? Things that can really directly influence and empower our world around us, besides just buying more stuff. So grandmother's medicine is kind of morphing and changing, and I have a lot of really amazing men and women in my community that I want to work closely to, and there's kind of like a stay tuned for that coming, because we're still not quite sure what it is going to be, but we want to be able to provide herbalism, soil, food, the know-how to how to do all these things and live in right livelihood with the earth for all communities, not just the ones that can afford to buy grandmother's medicine CSH, right? It's like anybody, and especially the communities that need it most, and really encourage like clinics and community gardens and just resilience within one another and supporting one another in that way. So we'll see. We'll see how that ends up happening.
Cool. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
So where can people find you? Where can they find out, you know, check out your online shop, and where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm off the grid. I have like an old school flip phone, right? So I don't have internet unless I go to town. So the probably easiest way to get in touch with me is through my Instagram. However, I want you to know that if you don't actually like tag me in something, I probably won't see it, because I check my Instagram like 3 times a week, maybe. And so an email is good, and that's hello@grandmothers-medicine.com. And my website is grandmothers-medicine.com. But if you have ideas or like things happening in your community already that are related to the thing that I shared as a vision, I would love to hear from you. Stories, anything. Like I said, I'm off grid, so it takes a while for me to get back to you. So like my friend Mila says, it's not you, it's me, babe.
Yeah. And so question, logistics. You have a flip phone, but you have amazing pictures on your Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
How so, do it? Yeah.
I'm a wizard. No, I'm just kidding.
well, duh, you're a wizard.
Yes. No, I actually, from my neighbor, Creative Reuse, I bought a used iPhone from my neighbor, and I use it as like an iTouch. So when I'm in town and I have Wi-Fi, so I use it as like my camera and podcasts and things like that. And when I'm in town, I have Wi-Fi, I'll post something. Or sometimes I post it from, like I said, my garden fae, Christina's page. So my poor landmates are always subject to, hey, can I borrow your phone? Because I just have a smartphone. But that's why it takes me forever to write back to Instagram comments or emails or whatever, because I have like one set computer day a week, which is today, Wednesdays. And it's awesome. A lot. I have a lot to do on those days. So sometimes it takes me a while to get back to you. But I read your comments, and I just like, I want to know who you people are, and I want to support you and your visions and your dreams too. So hopefully there'll be more chances to do that in the future.
Awesome. And then what is your Instagram too? We haven't said what that one is.
Oh, yeah, it's Grandmother's Medicine.
Cool. And all of those links that we've mentioned will be on the show notes page, dreamfreedombeauty.com. And listeners, before you go back to nature, go put your hands in the dirt, please go and just share, go on Facebook and just share this post with one friend or on your wall, or send someone an email or whatever, write a note and tie it to a bird's carrier pigeon's leg and send it to like whatever, but just share it, because that's the way that we are going to grow and spread and strengthen this community and spread these messages and this knowledge. And we really, that's the best thing you can do with this knowledge right now, and then go put your hands in the dirt.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Vicky, for coming and talking with us. It's been so fun, and we would love to have you back. So much to talk about.
Yeah. Lizzie and Natalie, thank you so much. I've never done an interview before, so this was really fun.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
Yeah.
we've had a few interview virgins, so that's been really fun. You did awesome.
I think a lot of us have a lot to say, and not just like me or the people you interviewed, but like all of us, we have something to share. And sometimes we think like, oh, I don't want to, but it's like, share it, man. We need lots of diversity of ideas.
Yeah. And this podcast was our sacred activism, is like, we need to have these conversations in a public way and share.
Thank you so much.
Spread. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we'll talk to you again soon. On a Wednesday.
Thanks, everybody. Yeah, on a Wednesday. We're out in the library right now.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, beautiful dreamers. It's Natalie here. And I want to extend a huge thank you to all of you. We've had over 10,000 unique downloads since our launch. And it's been really fun to get to connect with and hear from you. And if you want to connect with us on a little deeper level, you can hop on to the manifesting challenge that I, Natalie, am running, and you can learn how to get super clear about what you desire and also how to sync up with your favorite cycles in nature to manifest your desires in a harmonic way with your own flow and with nature's flow. So if you're interested, hop on over to dreamfreedombeauty.com/manifest and sign up for this challenge. And I'll see you there. Thanks. Bye.